You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, if you'd rather be catching a concert or touring a museum than taking up space on your couch and staying safer at home, a travel writer takes us on a tour of online opportunities from museums, art galleries, musicians, and more. First, Governor Evers issued an order yesterday telling Wisconsinites to stay at home while the state continues to fight the spread of the coronavirus. Some Republicans in the state legislature have criticized the rollout of the move, saying it created confusion for the state's residents and businesses. Jim Steinecke is a Republican representing Wisconsin's 5th Assembly District, which includes Kaukauna, Black Creek, and Ellington. He also serves as the Republican majority leader in the state assembly. Representative Steinecke, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, what are some of your reactions to the order itself and the way it was rolled out?
Well, listen, I think we all recognize that we're living in pretty historic times, dealing with something that is incredibly difficult to deal with. So, you know, we've been doing our best to give the administration some time to work and some space to deal with this issue as they move forward in the best way that they've been able to. However, just in this last week, I mean, just a couple of things that made everybody's jobs a little bit more difficult was coming out with the announcement on Monday, and it was zero details, and then waiting 25, 26 hours to release any details to the public. So as elected officials, it's difficult when you have constituents calling you really concerned about their businesses that they own or the businesses that they work for and wondering if they're going to be shut down and not being able to answer those questions. So that was probably the most problematic part.
I want to give a listen to the administration explaining some of the rationale on the order itself. Here's Andrea Palm, Secretary Designee of the State Department of Health Services, speaking yesterday.
If we continue on our current path without implementing Safer at Home to flatten the curve, the models show us that we would likely have 22,000 Wisconsinites who are positive for COVID-19 by April 8th and an estimated 440 to 1,500 deaths. This means thousands of Wisconsinites would need hospitalization and we would exceed our current capacity, our current hospital bed capacity.
So you were starting to touch on this earlier, the Safer at Home order itself being in place, scheduled to be 1 month now. Do you think that's the appropriate response to the concerns that the Secretary Designee raised there?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's really hard to know. Every state is seemingly taking a slightly different approach. I know Democratic governor in Colorado is going with less restrictive measures. Unfortunately, I think, you know, we're only going to be able to look in the rearview mirror and play armchair quarterback at some point in the future, hopefully not too distant future, to see which approach was right. I'm grateful that the governor didn't clamp down further than he did, because I think we desperately need to keep our economy going because the people of the state need their jobs. We can't have people ending up homeless and on the streets in droves. That would be a crisis in and of itself.
Are you concerned about the state's hospital system capacity to meet the number of potential new cases of coronavirus if this thing gets to a moderate case or worst case scenario?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think every state is dealing with this in their own way. No state is, I don't think, prepared for a pandemic of this size. I mean, I don't know that you can be prepared for something like this, but I know our hospitals in the state, our healthcare system in Wisconsin is second to none. Our healthcare workers are heroes in this situation. They're doing everything they can to treat those that are ill, get tests to people that need it, and they're putting themselves in harm's way in the meantime. So we all owe them a debt of gratitude, and hopefully we'll all get through this together.
What are you hearing from business owners in your district and beyond about the impact this could have on them?
So the first, 24 to 36 hours was just a lot of confusion over whether their particular business would be exempt or not. Now that we have a little bit more clarity about that, the ones that aren't exempt are obviously concerned about the viability of their businesses going forward. Businesses don't typically have loads of cash on hand to survive times where they have absolutely no income coming in. So I think it's inevitable that without help from the federal government and hopefully some relief on the regulatory side from the state, I think it's inevitable that we're going to see businesses fail and employees be out of jobs because of it. So the shorter this period is, the better it's going to be for everybody.
Talking to State Assembly Representative Jim Steinecke, Republican Majority Leader in the Assembly, about the Safer at Home order from the Evers administration and the overall impact of the coronavirus pandemic here in Wisconsin. Representative Steinecke, I know an issue we're hearing in every news break right now is what happens with our election on April 7th. Are poll workers going to want to turn out? We're seeing at least one city suing to try to stop in-person voting on that date. Some people are talking about wanting to postpone. What are your views on that from where we're sitting right now?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an incredibly difficult situation because we have hundreds of thousands of people that are already in the process of voting. The election's less than 2 weeks away. We can't really, unlike other states that just had primaries where you can postpone those primaries, in Wisconsin, this is a general election. So if you don't have the election, you don't have people in those seats. That's an incredibly dangerous precedent to set and something that I don't think is tenable. I think there's ways to secure the polling places. We're pushing everybody that we can to vote absentee. So to all your listeners out there, go to My Vote Wisconsin and you can easily request an absentee ballot online with just taking a picture of your photo ID from your phone. It's very simple to do and you can do it in 2 minutes, and that way you can alleviate some of the pressures at the poll.
Yeah, we've got the state Supreme Court election is one of those general elections you mentioned. And of course, a lot of cities and counties have their own local elections in addition to the presidential primary. Now, you mentioned Representative Steinecke a few moments ago, federal help on the economy here in Wisconsin and around the country. Of course, all eyes are on the U.S. Senate right now. What are you hoping to see come out of this maybe in the next couple of days?
Yeah, I'm hoping to see something that comes out that just gives relief to people that need it the most. One of the things that I'm concerned about is they seem to be taking a shotgun approach where people, whether they are working or not, are going to get checks. You know, my wife and myself included, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I would rather they funnel the money to people that are unemployed and need the checks at this point. But that being said, I think it's important that we get help out to not only individual workers, but also to the small businesses who are affected by these closures.
And is it going to require action then by the state legislature to implement some of the funding that might be coming from Congress?
It certainly could. I mean, we're already making plans to figure out how we can meet given the virus's impact on getting large groups together. I think, you know, we're trying to work through some of the mechanics of how we can operate in a way that keeps everybody safe and respects those that are either too vulnerable to show up or just can't because they have the virus, like in Representative Crowley's case. So we're working through a lot of different issues. It's going to take some time because we've never set up a system like this before, but we'll get there as quickly as we can, so we'll have a plan in place where we can do it safely.
Yeah, I understand some of your colleagues on the Senate side are trying to figure out how to have a session remotely because they're still waiting on the last day of the session already to finish up a bunch of loose ends. I mean, do you think we'll end up in a space where the Assembly could end up having a Zoom conference to vote or something like that?
Yeah, so I mean, that's difficult because we have conflicts with the state constitution and state statutes. State constitution requires that you meet in the seat of government, which is Madison, obviously. There are statutes that have provisions that allow for a virtual meeting in this kind of environment. But the problem is we've never had a virtual meeting, so that statute has never been tested. So what we do on the floor, if it's tested in court and found to be unconstitutional, can create all sorts of other problems. So I think we're going to have to do what we can to meet in person. But do it in a way that keeps our members separate from each other as much as we possibly can.
And Representative Steinecke, as we wrap up, the situation changes from day to day. The numbers change from day to day. What do you really have your eye on right now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're in talks on a consistent basis with the Hospitals Association to make sure that they're getting what they need. As an individual representative in Northeast Wisconsin, I'm working to make sure our poll workers are going to be safe and they have what they need to do their jobs without putting themselves at undue risk. And then answering dozens and dozens of phone calls and emails as questions come in about how this is impacting individual businesses and, you know, what we can do to help.
I'll let you get back to those emails. Representative Steinicke, thanks a lot for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks, Bob. Rob, I appreciate it.
That's State Representative Jim Steinicke. He represents Wisconsin's 5th Assembly District, including Kaukauna, Black Creek, and Ellington. He serves as the Republican Majority Leader in the State Assembly. He's with us today to talk about Governor Evers' order telling Wisconsinites to stay. It went into effect at 8 a.m. this morning and stays in place through at least April 24th. Coming up, a Wisconsin distillery is working to solve the shortage of disinfecting products. We'll hear more about their soon-to-be-released hand sanitizing product. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the shelves have been bare of hand sanitizer in many Wisconsin stores lately. We'll hear from a Wisconsin distillery that's making its own sanitizer and then making it available for free. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with stories about living in a time of social distancing.
Life is really weird right now. It's tough, sometimes it's hilarious, and sometimes it's really scary. People have lost their jobs, others are working from home, and then there are the fine folks that are still heading into work every day, going to hospitals, grocery stores, factories, and restaurants. Regardless of your situation, when you're stuck at home right now, how are you coping? We asked our dear listeners to share their stories about life in isolation. They called me and sent me emails. Here's what they had to say.
Good morning, Maury. This is Xochitl Garcia. I've been here in Madison for 20 years. We've been at home now for a week. My husband lost his job last Thursday. At the same time, I have two kids. So with this new layer of stress that this new virus brings to our lives, we've been coping by cooking. And my country, when you are celebrating or when you are sad, you are cooking. So I've been reorganizing my pantry, cooking traditional recipes from my grandma, food that bring comfort to our souls.
Hi, this is Alyssa from Madison. I've been setting up FaceTime check-ins with friends, having virtual happy hours with others, and daily phone check-ins with my mom, who lives a couple hours away.
Hi, this is Debbie from Rice Lake, Wisconsin. During this time of uncertainty with the COVID-19 virus, I've been planning a baby quilt for a new great niece. I am finishing another quilt. I joined a virtual cooped-up quilt block of the week by my local quilt shop. Gives me something to look forward to.
Hi, this is June of South Milwaukee. I get a little fresh air walking in a local park or even just in my backyard. It helps a lot. Clear the cobwebs out.
Our dog has enjoyed the extra walks throughout the day, and we're seeing more folks in our neighborhood out and about doing the same. We all kind of wave from a distance and seem to automatically give this, we'll all get through this, look of understanding to one another.
We wave at the neighbors across the road, and they wave back.
We like to go for walks, something that we haven't done in many years because we were so busy taking care of the needs of the family that we didn't have time to connect. So now we are taking time to be together as a family.
Hi, I'm Tom Castle. I'm an actor and musician in Madison. My day job is singing for nursing home residents and kids at libraries. Needless to say, I'm out at least 2 months' work at this time. Plus, the play I was in had to close early, and the next play is postponed indefinitely. You know, my office is my home, so no changes there. But because I'm a sole proprietor business, I can't collect unemployment. Coincidentally, I just begun a campaign to develop some voiceover work.
I'm not going to lie and tell you that we are happy. You know, we are enjoying those little moments of happiness and comfort. But, you know, we try to talk, try to share our emotions, but we don't really talk about fear, anxiety, and stress, and how do we really feel, because we don't want to make more chaos at home, right? We want to keep some harmony and peace. We want to make sure that our kids feel secure and safe. I want to encourage everybody to find techniques of coping and finding ways to keep positive.
And make sure that you are in touch with family and friends.
Be safe, take care, and keep in touch. Thanks.
Those were the stories from listeners around Wisconsin living through a time of social distancing. We hope to do more crowdsourced stories like this in coming weeks on Wisconsin Life. Next time, what are some random acts of kindness you've experienced recently? Head to Wisconsin Life's Facebook and Twitter pages to learn how to submit your story. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, cleaning and disinfecting products, things like hand sanitizer, have been in short supply on store shelves lately. One Wisconsin-based distillery is trying to help get more hand sanitizer to people by making their own product and making it free. We have two guests joining us now from the La Crosse Distillery Company. Chad Staley is president. Hey, Chad, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks, Rob. Thanks for having us on the air. Appreciate it. We're big WPR fans.
That's great. And Nicholas Weber is also with us, CEO and also a co-founder. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Like Chad said, big fans of WPR, and you know, we're sustaining members as well. So appreciate you having us on.
Thanks so much. Well, Chad, before we get to the hand sanitizer, can you tell us how this whole pandemic thing has been affecting your business so far?
Certainly, Rob. You know, we like so many other public spaces have had to close our doors to our tasting room. We have a pretty robust tasting room here in La Crosse where people are able to eat and drink and buy bottles and take tours of the distillery, et cetera. So things have been pretty quiet around here other than some takeout, and we're continuing some production on some of our products while now focused entirely on this hand sanitizer project. We've basically converted all of our systems over to this hand sanitizer project.
So, Nick, what led you at the La Crosse Distillery to turn to making hand sanitizer?
Yes, Rob. I mean, we saw the need, you know, kind of coming, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and you know, we started talking. Chad and I met with our master distiller, Mitch, and sat down with him and Casey and said, look, there's going to be a need here. And, you know, what can we do? How can we convert this? Let's start looking at it. And really kind of started from a, you know, a singular conversation. And now it's really turned into something, we're right now we're working, trying to serve the local community. We're setting up, you know, multiple distribution points within the city of La Crosse for our local community and our citizens here to donate free hand sanitizer to everybody. And then we're talking with the state and federal government along with private companies, and we're trying to ramp production up right now. It's been, this thing has been changing by the hour, as we all know. And we're moving as fast as we can.
Chad, what is different, about producing hand sanitizer at a distillery versus, the vodka and whiskey and other things you might usually make?
Well, it really starts out the same. So as we would make our various spirits, you know, currently we've been producing a vodka and a gin and some whiskeys to go into barrels. But for some of those products, they're all made from a base spirit, essentially a neutral grain spirit or ethanol, so to speak. And so our first line of distillation usually creates a very neutral alcohol base. So that's what's going into these hand sanitizers. Now there's other parts to the formula that the government, both the TTB, the Trade and Tax Bureau, and the FDA, has guided us with a formulation that we're able to use in this time of a national emergency. So we're taking our basics and converting it over to this hand sanitizer project. There's not a whole lot different as far as this initial distillation goes.
Talking to Chad Staley and Nicholas Weber from the La Crosse Distillery Company, talking about how they're converting operations to make hand sanitizer at the distillery and then giving it away for free. Nick, obviously flavor isn't a concern as it is with your usual products. How about scent of your hand sanitizer? What are you doing for that?
Certainly. Good question. So one thing that we've done is we work with a lot of botanicals in our gin, our Field Notes gin. It's an organic gin based product, and we're taking those botanicals and dropping essences into the hand sanitizer to help it, you know, be more aromatic. Of course, right now, you know, we're just trying to fill needs. We have everybody reaching out to us from emergency responders, police department, sheriff's department, the SEOC, among many others. So, you know, we are making sure that we make this smell good and also not, you know, and be something that can, you know, isn't going to dry your hands out, but. But first and foremost, we want to make sure we can kill germs and help with the fight on this COVID-19.
Chad, what's the timeline on a conversion like this? How long does it take to move from from booze to hand sanitizer?
We've hit the ground running, Rob. I mean, we've already, just today, you know, this all came into focus like last Wednesday or Thursday. And literally today, we are bottling the first 1,000 bottles of 2 ounce.
Wow.
Personal use bottles, and we're going to get those out to the public in the next day or two.
And Nick, I know there's a community of distillers. Are you hearing other people jumping into this around the country?
Absolutely. You know, it's been pretty encouraging. It's really brought community together amongst all distilleries, not just in the state, but in the country, and I would imagine around the globe. So we're all talking on some level. You know, there's a lot of calls coming in. I'm not going to lie. I mean, been on the phone last 72 hours with suppliers and people that are in need, nursing homes, child care facilities, hospitals. I mean, you name it. So yeah, it's been really cool to kind of see everybody come together. I feel like it's our duty, you know, to do this. Especially we're citizens. You know, we embrace community. So anything we can do to help, we're going to do. It's the right thing to do.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to Chad Staley and Nicholas Weber from the La Crosse Distilling Company, talking about their efforts to convert to producing hand sanitizer and distributing it for free. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 8:30 on The Morning Show, a Wisconsin healthcare researcher tells us how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting some of the most vulnerable populations in the state. That's tomorrow morning at 8:30 here on the Ideas Network. Now, we talked yesterday about using the internet to better connect with people while staying at home and observing social and physical distancing. Today, we're going to hear some ideas about connecting with places, maybe some of your favorites that aren't accessible right now or some exotic locations you've only dreamed of going. So much more is accessible to experience and enrich ourselves right now over the internet. One of Shakespeare's sonnets every day.
Sonnet 1. From fairest creatures we desire increase, that thereby beauty's rose might never die. But as the riper should by time decease, his tender heir might bear his memory.
Meredith Carey is an associate editor at Condé Nast Traveler and co-host of the podcast Women Who Travel. She's written several articles already on the idea of virtual sightseeing, including one published today called The Ultimate Guide to Armchair Travel. Meredith, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this has got to be a weird time, Meredith, for someone who writes and talks about travel for a living, but you seem to have really dived into this.
Yeah, I mean, just like everyone else, we, the editors at Condé Nast Traveler, have had to hit pause a little bit on all of our travel plans for the time being. But since it is our job and it's what we live and breathe, it doesn't mean that we haven't stopped thinking, or we are still thinking about travel. And so we've really tried to think about all the ways that you can travel without ever leaving your house, the ways you can travel when you're taking a break from work or when you're done for the day. So we've tried to pull together all the places that are opening their doors to virtual travel on the internet.
We just heard Sir Patrick Stewart reading some Shakespeare there. Give us a sense of some of the other things that you went exploring when you were looking at, you know, museums and art opportunities around the world.
So you can obviously visit your more classical places like the Louvre, which has virtual tours of its Egyptian antiquities department. The Vatican museums also offer 360-degree tours of things like the Sistine Chapel and Raphael's room. But with Google's arts and culture collections, you can actually visit a ton, like hundreds of museums online. The Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, the Isabel Stewart Gardner in Boston, the Tate Modern in London. You can go into the Uffizi in Florence. So all these museums that not even locals are seeing right now, you have an opportunity to explore. And on the Shakespeare note, one of my favorite things that's happening right now is the Met Opera in New York is showing some of its encore performances every night. It's available at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. So this week is Wagner week, and there are new operas every single day. And I think I wouldn't regularly go to the opera, but to be able to get to see it every single night is very exciting.
Right. Have you taken this as an opportunity to maybe broaden your horizons, things you wouldn't have laid down the cash while you were traveling to see, since it's free in your own home? Check it out.
100%. And I think, especially when you think about virtual reality opportunities, you know, you can climb Everest if you have a Google Cardboard, or you just want to watch the YouTube video. So I think there are lots of things that you can do that maybe you never would have done way outside of going to a museum that are opening up right now on the internet.
We're talking to Meredith Carey from Condé Nast Traveler, talking about virtual travel. A lot of museums and musicians and others are opening up free opportunities to check them out online. And Meredith, I know it's not quite the same looking at it on a piece of art, say, on a screen as opposed to in person. But I think you wrote this. You can get up closer to a lot of these pieces of art than any good museum curator is ever going to let you.
Oh, 100%. No alarms will go off. You will be perfectly fine zooming in very close and noticing things that maybe you might not have if you were in a very cramped environment, like at somewhere like the Louvre.
Now, you also wrote about an aquarium in Boston that's offering some cool ways to experience it virtually. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so there are actually a bunch of aquariums, the Boston's New England Aquarium and also the Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach, California, that are offering some really fun videos every day and Facebook Lives. So you get to see the turtles being fed, learn about the sharks and the stingrays from the zoologists and biologists who are there at the zoo taking care of these animals while we are all at home. One of my favorites is at that Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach. There are 20 penguins that are always live on view for you to see. It's absolutely a delight. And when you maybe don't want to be quite as cultured, it's very much the thing to do.
And you also brought up the idea of doing some travel reading as well as our online visits. Can you recommend some great reads that, you know, even if we can't get to a bookstore or library right now, we might be able to download? What's going to enhance our travel experience just by reading?
I mean, I think you can travel around the world in 180,000 books, let alone 180. But I think that Dominicana, about the Dominican Republic, which came out last year by Angie Cruz, is one of my absolute favorites. And then another one that I think is really transportative is The Interpreter of Maladies by Jhumpa Lahiri. It's a classic, was put out in 1999, but I think is such a delight and a real transportation to India.
Do you have ideas? I don't know how to. Would it be fun to set up a travel itinerary before we get started, just randomly poking around online? Is it worth that level of preparation before we get started?
I mean, I think one of the things that I'm doing right now is I'm going through my Instagram, my photos, my friends' photos, and creating a huge Google Maps pin board of all the places that I want to go when it's safe for us to do so. So I think if you're interested in a specific place or you want to be nostalgic about a trip that you have taken recently or many years ago, those are kind of three buckets that I would say start with when you're trying to figure out what movies to watch or what TV shows to watch or what books to read or even what dishes to cook at night, because I know that that's how traveler editors have been traveling a little bit, is cooking some of our favorite dishes from around the world.
And what are some of your favorite travel documentaries or travel videos that we might want to check out?
I mean, there are so many options, and I think that one that I love and always go back to is Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations. It's just so inspirational. I learned so much, and it definitely is great to see him interacting so closely with all these people from all over the world. I've really been loving, though, very nostalgic movies. So watching Roman Holiday, watching Endless Summer, really having a throwback to travel long before I knew it. And most of us knew it, which kind of, I know that when I've been watching TV a lot, I'll be like, oh my gosh, they're touching their face or they're so close to each other.
Oh, no.
And when I think back to those black and white movies, that thought kind of goes away.
We're talking to Meredith Carey, associate editor of Condé Nast Traveler, about ideas for visiting and experiencing famous cultural institutions and locations all online. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been doing this, going online to check out a museum, a musical performance, what have you? What's gotten you excited? What are you sharing with your friends? Flip it around. Do you work at one of these places? I know a lot of Milwaukee museums have, and the zoo have created special online opportunities. Or do you work at an institution in the state that's making more material, more events available to people online? Do you need suggestions for our guests on things to view or read or watch? And do you have a favorite travel-themed TV show, documentary, or movie that you've gone back and watched? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about traveling the world online with museums, musicians, and more sharing their work for free on the internet. Meredith Carey is with us, associate editor at Condé Nast Traveler. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you done any of this armchair traveling in recent days or weeks? Do you have some virtual experience plans you're hatching? Have you checked out a museum, a live performance or streamed performance online? Did you have to cancel a big trip due to travel restrictions? Are you trying to get a taste of that anyway online? And do you have a favorite movie you've gone back to featuring exotic locations around the world? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I looked up some of the things going on in Milwaukee. Discovery World Museum has some special science exhibits going on online, including their aquarium. The zoo there has some special exhibits, the art museum. Have you, Meredith, been looking maybe off the beaten path, not just at the world's most famous museums and aquariums, but just seeing what's out there in smaller places or regional centers?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the ways that we are interacting with those places are through that Google Arts and Culture collection, because they have such a breadth of much smaller locations. And yes, you aren't going to be seeing the art necessarily in the context of a wall, but just getting to see a look at their collection is such a great opportunity. And one that, when you're going to somewhere that's a little farther off the beaten path, like you said, is going to be more difficult and maybe not as high on your bucket list.
Now, you mentioned the opera and things like that, streaming. I'm sorry, not screaming. I mean, maybe people say opera sounds like screaming. I'm not going to go there, though. But I know a lot of musicians in all kinds of genres are streaming, you know, solo performances or very small group performances. Is that something you've been checking out so far?
Definitely. So Chris Martin and John Legend, big names, have definitely been doing live sets on Instagram. A lot of them have been using the hashtag Together at Home. So I would definitely check that out if you're looking for bigger names. One of my personal favorites is D-Nice, the rapper and DJ, has been having 6-7 hour old school, like 60s, 70s hits. And then like 90s hip hop and R&B DJ sets on Instagram Live. Also an absolute blast when I was enjoying it last weekend. I think there were 100,000 other people in there with me. And I think, you know, when you're going to a concert, there are hopefully never going to be 100,000 people there. And so it's definitely a really great opportunity to experience things as a collective in a way that we wouldn't be able to otherwise. If you're looking for something a little more classical, the Philharmonie Berlin has closed until April 19th for now, but has opened its digital library of performances, and they have something like 600 shows available, and you get 30 days of free access to them if you go and check them out online, which is very exciting.
Let's go to a caller now. Susan is with us in Oregon. Susan, hi.
Hi. Well, my friend turned 75 yesterday, and she was feeling sad because she could not have her
big birthday party. So eight of us met in the Hy-Vee parking lot in Madison. We just left there a little while ago. So we had a big birthday party in the parking lot. We each had a balloon strapped to our car, tied to our car. We had cake. We had non-alcoholic sparkling juice, and we toasted each other. We put on all the Lays and all the noisemakers from New Year's Eve. And my son blasted off of his little radio. He was blasting happy birthday songs. So we had a big celebration in the parking lot at Hy-Vee, and it was really fun.
Susan, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Social distancing, but still in person there. Meredith, have you seen people, trying to get together online to celebrate, whether it's at some of the big things we're talking about or those virtual raves or what have you?
Definitely. And I think one of the benefits of the internet and the interconnectedness that a lot of us feel is that we've been able to talk to each other online despite living very far away from each other for a long time. So I've been calling my friends who don't live in the U.S. probably more often than I would have before. But, you know, using Zoom, using FaceTime, a lot of people are doing that, playing board games. I've been having movie nights with my friends, watching the movies that I mentioned before. So I think there are a lot of opportunities to connect that maybe we had before, but we weren't using to their fullest extent.
Thanks again for that call. Happy birthday to your friend, by the way. We'll go now to Karen with us in Augusta. Karen, hello.
Hi. I'm a lifelong Anglophile, and my daughter has promised me a trip to London next summer. Hopefully we can go when all this nastiness is over. And I was just wondering if you had any suggestions for a must-not-miss site I should see.
Oh, what do you think, Meredith? Any thoughts on London, assuming she can travel?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I mean, so many options. One, I would say go to Fortnum & Mason for high tea. It is absolutely beautiful there, and the snacks are lovely. And then as far as other things to do that maybe aren't eating, the Columbia Flower Market is really, really beautiful. I'm just thinking of things that you would be outside and really breathing in the culture of London and seeing a lot of Londoners. So the flower market is a for sure. And then I'm trying to think. There are so many places to go. The British Museum is obviously a classic, as is the Tower of London. You know, I think if you're an Anglophile, hitting up those must-sees is really great and probably good for a first trip. You could go back to London 7,000 times and not see it all. So those are my top hits.
All right. Well, good luck on that trip. And Meredith, did you come across anything online that she can start doing her homework and touring today?
Well, the Tate Modern is actually one of the places that you can explore through Google's Arts and Culture Collections. And I know that they have a lot of museums that are also available on there. So if you'd like to check those out, they are in the collections online. And then I would say that checking to see what stores and bars and restaurants you might want to go to, I would buy a gift card to go to those places when you do get the opportunity to. Obviously, putting money in the hands of local businesses will always help during this time when they're getting less people in through the door. So maybe start planning ahead and making those purchases now for that future trip, knowing that you'll be able to visit at some point in the future.
In our last minute and a half or so, Meredith, what's been some of the most exciting things you've come across in your online tourism efforts?
Oh, man. I mean, I think one of the cool things that we're doing right now is we have this series called Here Now, which is showing slices of life around the world because most of us are at home. So looking at the people in Madrid who are playing bingo with each other on their balconies, the Singapore cocktail bartenders who are dropping off drinks for people in their homes. I think it's been really fun to see how people are traveling much less around their own cities, but still enjoying each other's company. And I think that's been a really great positive thing to come out of this, is this sense of community.
Well, Meredith, thank you so much. Maybe I'll bump into you at a virtual museum in the next few days.
Yeah, we'll definitely check out all the things we've compiled online in our Armchair Travel Guide and our 101 Ways to Travel Without Leaving Your Couch.
Thanks for joining us. That's Meredith Carey, associate editor for Condé Nast Traveler and co-host of the podcast Women Who Travel, another way to experience the world of travel online, by the way. We talked to her today about traveling and finding exciting cultural experiences while we can't travel for real, all available online. After repeated victories in the Democratic primary for president, former Vice President Joe Biden is now a clear frontrunner over Vermont U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders. Biden is considered the moderate in the race, but as Rich Kramer reports, his policies and those of other national Democrats are to the left of some Wisconsin Democratic leaders.
At a recent meeting of the Dunn County Democratic Party, around 30 people gathered in the Menominee Public Library. They discussed how county party members can become delegates and help select the Democratic presidential nominee this July at the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee.
You get like 4 hours sleep, you work your ass off. It is a fascinating and powerful experience to do it.
But that's Lindsay Ketchell of the town of Otter Creek. She was a delegate in 2016 and a supporter of self-described Democratic Socialist Bernie Sanders. She thinks Sanders appeals to voters who want a bold change.
And what I think Bernie's really trying to do is just talk about real issues that are affecting real people every day. And these issues are mounting.
At the same meeting is Peter Hamm, a Joe Biden supporter. He thinks Sanders' proposals on nationalizing the U.S. healthcare system and free college for all students will push moderate Democrats away.
This is not going to happen. We've got a Senate that, you know, is so retrograde now and so Republican that they'll shoot anything down, even if you could get it through the House.
But Marquette University political science professor Julia Azari says those terms are relative. She says both would have been compared to mainstream Democrats 20 years ago.
You have a pretty strong and organized progressive wing of the National Democratic Party. So, you know, even if there's a more centrist wing, the National Party is still trending left.
By comparison, they're also more competitive than Wisconsin's Democratic standard bearer, Governor Tony Evers. Both Sanders and Biden have called for making some form of government-run health care available to everybody. They also both want some form of free tuition for college students. Contrast that with Evers. At a 2018 primary debate, Evers stood out among seven other candidates when the moderator asked about higher education.
And how many on this panel would support free tuition for in-state students to attend two-year colleges or technical schools? I see every hand except for Mr. Evers.
Part of the reason Evers won't move to the left is that he can't when Republicans run the legislature. He created task forces to study student loan debt and climate change, but neither step carried much weight. Robert Craig, with the progressive advocacy group Citizens Action Wisconsin, says Evers has ignored other campaign pledges made to his base. For example, when it comes to health care, Evers pledged to work toward a state-run health insurance option for all residents. As governor, he hasn't really discussed it. Craig says Wisconsin, with its progressive roots, once set the standard for the Democratic Party.
But it's interesting at this snapshot in time that, very unusual, you can't really find many times in recent Wisconsin history, I mean of the last century, where it looked like the National Democratic Party was well to the left of the state Democratic Party, as reflected by the office holders.
Craig says it's a different story this year, regardless of whether it's the moderate or the progressive at the top of the ticket. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, seniors, people with compromised immune systems, and others are at a particular risk if they're exposed to the novel coronavirus. We'll find out how to protect vulnerable populations during the ongoing pandemic. A Wisconsin researcher tells us about the latest foreign efforts to interfere with elections here in the United States. And with more people spending a lot of time at home, many are discovering or starting to rediscover video games. The director of a national video game museum tells us there's a game out there for everyone, and we'll invite you to share some of your favorites. You can get started right now. Tweet us at Central Time WPR or email ideas@WPR.org. Do you find yourself playing more video games these days, maybe while you're shut in at home? Have you turned back to an old classic, checked out something new? Or is there something you're nostalgic for that you can't find? Tell us about it, that and more, coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.